Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. I'm joined once again by AJ.
What's up guys, it's me, your co-host, Anthony Torgrud. You can find me also on Twitter at Torgrud45. That's my last name and the number 45 like Balotelli. We're joined once again, as usual, by Madison as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for this week's episode. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
And then this week, we also have a very, very special guest. He is the co-host of the State of Play podcast, as well as a contributor for Football Italia, These Footy Times, The Gentleman Ultra. He is a co-founder of the AC Milan Bros, and he's been featured on The Guardian. He is a big name, very busy man. Welcome to the podcast, Matthew Santangelo. How are you?
Pleasure to be on, guys. And, of course, everyone's plugging their Twitter handle, so you guys can find me on Twitter at Matt_Santangelo.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, pleasure to have you on this episode, Matt. Before we get started, the show is brought to you by our friends over at Euro Fantasy League. If you haven't already, make sure to check out our Serie A Fantasy League. You can find out more details about that via our Twitter page on the pinned tweet. Right, so we've there's obviously four of us this time, so it's good. Bit more analysis of the game on Friday night. 3-0 win over Empoli at San Siro. Was a nice way to start the weekend. I like it when we play on a Friday night and win, because it means that I've got a little bit of joy before I go and watch Huddersfield lose at the weekend. So yeah, that was nice. Pretty boring first half, but AJ, second half much better.
Yeah, the first half I thought was very bad, pretty boring, and I kind of kicked myself in the ass there because I started tweeting shit about Castillejo for having a poor first half, and then of course he goes on to have a perfect second half, earning a 9.9 rating on Who Scored, if people care about that. Got a goal and assist, so he definitely went off, and of course the man, Shish Kebab Piontek, got another goal as usual, and then Kessie, he chipped the keeper, that was nice. It's interesting seeing him do, you know, take a shot that's actually pretty solid as opposed to just shooting it into the top seats there. So that was cool to see. You could tell everyone's pretty happy. And then Borini actually scored a world-class goal, in my opinion. He beat like four defenders and then rounded the keeper, but it was called off about 4 minutes after the goal was given. Cutrone apparently disrupted a defender, so they called it back, but it didn't make a difference. Still in the game. And yeah, 3 points, still in fourth place. So we're doing good.
Yeah, man, it was, like you say, it was a really, really bad first half from us. I think we started the game slow, don't get me wrong. Obviously, we had the goal ruled out for offside. Paqueta with a header. But that was correctly ruled out. And I think they kind of knocked the stuffing out of us a little bit. Empoli took the encouragement from that and started to sit a little bit deeper. Matty, what was the key to unlocking them in the second half? Was it just upping the tempo a little bit?
Yeah, I think it was just opening up their defense. And I think that we were kind of testing them out in the first half and trying to tire them out a little bit. I'm not going to lie, during the first half, I was like, great, here's the same AC Milan that we watched at the first half of the season. And then the second half of that game was just the same team that we've been watching for the past, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. Piontek scored for, what, his fifth game in a row now?
Sixth game.
You can't even keep track now because he's just always, you know, scoring these great goals. But I think it was pretty much just unlocking their defense was the difference in the second half.
Yeah, and Matt, how much of that was down to Castillejo's performance? Obviously, he's not had as many minutes as he'd like in the league this season because, you know, Suso's got that right wing spot pretty much locked down. But he had a couple of efforts from distance in the first 45 minutes, and then in that second half he provided, you know, a lot more dynamic, a different dynamic down that right side.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, you guys all touched on it, really, that there was another game for Milan where they started off slow against Atalanta. They pretty much did the same. And, of course, Piontek got that goal late in the first half. And that kind of was a trickle-down effect that kind of carried over into the second half where Milan ran away with that against Atalanta. Same thing pretty much happened here. Got a goal earlier in the first few minutes from Piontek. More of a simple finish. Again, a lot of his other goals have been via header or the two goals versus Napoli, which were, it required a little bit more of him. But overall, this one was just a simple finish. And, I just found it fascinating. Again, down that right flank is where most of the activity was coming from. Shout out to also Conti for getting his first start for, I don't know how long, 700-something days in the league. He was really good, and it just goes to show you that Milan finally have depth at that right-back position. But, yeah, you guys mentioned, Castelletto. Obviously, I tweeted something out a couple weeks ago pretty much highlighting Suso's, falling-off production. Not so much that I don't like the players, the fact that I think, again, there's something to be said about how he, for whatever reason, the past couple seasons, has been falling off a little bit in the second half. In terms of the numbers, at least, and in goal involvement. It was great to see Castelletto get the run in after Suso got suspended the previous game with a yellow card. And so, again, having that option, having that guy off the bench that is, getting those minutes to show what he's capable of, even if he doesn't start each and every weekend. And, absolutely, him getting the goal, having an assist, it just gives, Milan another dimension down that right flank.
Yeah, AJ, a lot of people were saying before the game that they were expecting the right side to be our weak point because obviously we had Conte who, as Matt said, was starting his first game in well over a year.
Yeah, I believe it was 544 days actually.
It was on Milan Data. But yeah, about 544 days I think it was, which is absolutely nuts. And then obviously basically playing our backup right winger, with all respect, in Castelletto. A lot of people were saying that we might struggle down the right-hand side. Although Conte was a little bit shaky defensively, we can be massively encouraged by his debut. Well, it feels like his debut. It's not his debut, but,
Yeah, I mean, not to bring back our classic adage from the banter era, but it really was like a new signing because it's been so long. And one thing that we got to give him credit for is both games he's made an appearance in, he's got an assist. So, he was, I think, the highest scoring defender his breakthrough season at Atalanta the year before we bought him. And clearly that hasn't slowed down. His attacking ability is still there. Like you said, his defense was a bit shakier at times, but I think that's going to come back to him pretty soon. He just needs those minutes. And I think there was a bit of a disconnect between him and Castillejo in the first half. Castillejo was pretty selfish on the ball. And I think it wasn't intentional so much as it was he just was unaware of the overlapping run like Calabria and Suso are used to doing with each other. I think that just kind of caught them off guard, and it took a little bit to warm up, to get going on there. Just a quick observation, kind of going back to the Atalanta game, and because we started the same way with this game, kind of slow, methodical first half where they kind of put the pressure on us, and then second half we turned it up and went off. Do you guys think that you see this strategy in like combat sports and stuff? If there's a fighter going up against like a real heavy knockout puncher, they tend to sit back and let their opponent win the first round and tire him out. Do you think we were kind of going for that idea with tiring out Atalanta because they were the top scoring side in the league, then maybe doing the same with Empoli there, and then just capitalizing on that fitness in the second half? Do you think that was something that was going through our mind?
Well, I'll throw this over to Maddie, but all I know is that Empoli have like,
yeah, Empoli shit.
They've scored 30 goals though, which is like comfortably the most in the bottom like eight teams. So we definitely had to be a bit wary of the threat there.
I mean, I definitely think it's a possibility. I don't know if, because that's like a dangerous game to play. Because if we concede a goal, then we were in that mindset to tire them out, then we have our backs to the wall and we have to fight back uphill. But I can see there being a strategy similar. I'm just not quite sure what it is.
I think in that game, the Atalanta game, I think it was a perfect, it was a microcosm of what Milan are post, at the end, from December on, really, or January on, is that they can defend, they can beat you in multiple different ways. I think, what we saw in the first half of the season where when they would take that approach that you just mentioned of sitting back, trying to feel the game out the first 30 to 40 minutes, they wound up, you know, for whatever reason, conceding, and now you're all of a sudden you're chasing the result, or you score the one goal, it's 1-1 or 1-0, and then you try to sit back and absorb, and that team winds up getting the equalizer, and that's exactly how they dropped points in the first half of the season, mm-hmm. versus these games lately where they're able to kind of flip it on and turn the game on when they need to turn it on, and know how to kind of, you know, kind of kill the game out, sit back, defend, do what they got to do. They did a great job of that against Atalanta, where they got the goal, they got the equalizer, got the two other additional goals, and they were able to comfortably absorb pressure, sit back, and see the game out. So I think, again, and maybe so much the Gattuso does rely on his defense, to the fact that let's get the one goal, two goals, and then kind of sit back and let's kind of kill this game out without having to exhaust ourselves. And I think that's obviously a huge thing coming up with the Lazio game. But I think just it just goes to show you, I think Gattuso did a great job of knowing how to manage the game a little bit better. I still think he's even is improving in some regards to his substitutions. I think that was a big concern of his in the first half of the season, where he seemed to make the wrong substitutions at the wrong time. Now I think he's starting to get that down as well. And when you put everything together with the form we're in, having the striker, obviously, that to score goals, having that spark from Paqueta, I think your Milan are understanding of the fact that they can beat you in a multiple different ways.
So do you think that, because personally, I have not seen a Milan team play like this in such a long time. So do you think it's the players that we have are finally hitting form, getting chemistry together? Or do you think it's Gattuso's tactics finally flourishing?
I think it's, I mean, if you look at what happened, even the second half of last year, I think in terms of points, and again, I remember this stat coming up quite a bit once, you know, Gattuso was kind of on a hot seat earlier in the season, is that in 2018, I think Milan were third most in points.
Yeah.
So right. once Gattuso took over last year from Montella, he was in such a huge hole, but he was able to do quite a good job with the team he had, with the little talent he had at his disposal. Again, you had guys like Kajanić, Andre Silva not performing, and a young kid in Cutrone pretty much carrying the attack. Obviously, Calhanoglu was revitalized. He had a great second half. Kessié was great as well. I just think the fact that he came into such a situation where they were so deep in the table that he really couldn't climb his way out. They got the clean slate in this season, and you're really starting to show that in time, despite even all the injuries, despite the whole Higuain situation, he's doing a fantastic job with this team. Yes, I don't think he's a finished product as a manager. I still think there's things he has to work on tactically and in terms of managing a game. But we're really starting to see about a year plus into his tenure, that he is a good manager. He knows how to get things done. And I think the biggest thing from him is that he has the quality of players around him needed to get the results, while also having the complete support of the locker room, which I think is so big for him as a manager who really does rely on that sort of element to get results.
Yeah, you've absolutely hit the nail on the head, to be fair there, mate. I feel like he weathered the storm a little bit with the injury. I think Milan have a really, really unforgiving fan base. So when we were dropping points, sort of November, December time, when we had that horrendous list of injuries, people weren't all that sympathetic. You know, I think people still expected us to walk over certain teams, and it just doesn't happen that way, because you train, you know, throughout the week with a certain system, with your starting 11, set pieces, everything comes down to that. And whenever you have injuries, it's going to disrupt your plans. And I think that, yes, we had some bad results during that period, but we've come out of it and we seem to be moving up through the gears now. Like, we obviously, the Atalanta win was the most impressive of the three, but we've taken 9 points out of our last nine in the league. We've scored 9 goals in the process and conceded only one. You know, that's fantastic. You know, this is a team that in recent years has struggled to put sides away at home that we should be beating. Whether that's been down to bad management, whether that's been down to a poor quality squad, whether it's just been down to the fans putting a lot of pressure on the players, you know, from actually inside the stadium, which has been a thing in the past. I mean, I put a tweet out after the game saying that there was something different about that game against Empoli on Friday that I haven't felt for a while, whereby it was 0-0 at half time and we hadn't played well in the first half, but the fans weren't getting on the players' back because they knew that all we needed was one chance to open up the game, and it came early in the second half, and all of a sudden it was, you know, it sort of turned into a party atmosphere after that, because we made it 2-0 very quickly, and then the game was pretty much over. So I think the whole mentality of the club from top to bottom has been changed. I think Gattuso deserves a hell of a lot of credit for that. He just gets on with his shit, basically. You know, I don't know how much you read his interviews and that kind of thing, but he's always been very quick to deflect blame from his players. He's always been very quick to say there are no excuses. I've just got to do the best job I can. I've got to pick up points. And he just got on with it. And we're now in a very, very strong position, hopefully, given that other teams are starting to falter a little bit. You know, we've got some big games coming up, but we've got some winnable games coming up. We've got to go into every game with confidence at this point. So,
yeah, and I just want to add on to that too. I think there's an interesting thing to make note of is the fact that a lot of people talked about, you know, creating chances for when we had Higuain, when we had Cutrone playing, you know, quite a bit of the games. It wasn't so much creating chances, it was actually taking them. I think, again, if you look at the stats, I don't have everything in front of me, but I think if you compare the first half of the season when you had Higuain to the second half in this brief, you know, cluster of games where we had Piontek, I don't see that we're creating a ton more chances because Suso's not as productive as he is in the first half, and Çalhanoğlu hasn't quite hit his stride. So I think it was more the fact that, again, having that type of striker who maybe when you're not playing your best can deliver that one or two touches to get you over the hump and to get you results. And I think that's what we've seen over the past 2 weeks. And of course, really, since he arrived with Piontek, I sound like a Piontek homer here, but he's playing tremendous. And I think, again, it's along with him and Paqueta, you really start to see not only the crowd and the fans, this whole entire fan base, but the entire team, right? You know, that game against Atalanta, the first half was a perfect example. They played awful. They were down, not pressing, not doing anything. Piontek, a great solo effort to get the goal that equalized. And then the second half, it was a completely different Milan.
Yeah.
Same thing with this one against Empoli. First half was a little bit rough around the edges. Piontek gets a goal. It kind of eases everybody up, and then the goals start piling on. I think that's such a huge thing, again, is having that guy that, you know what, we have a guy that can carry us in moments where we maybe don't have it. And I think you can kind of compare it in many ways or in some ways to when Balotelli first arrived, how we really weren't creating a ton of chances, but we had that hitman to say, you know what, let's have the top on his back. Let's have him carry the workload. And Piontek, from what we're seeing, has no problem doing that.
You could also make an argument that that there were times, especially last season, as you kind of mentioned earlier, when Cutrone was that guy. We were struggling. We were really struggling to create chances. Andre Silva was going through a drought. Officer Kalinic was just useless. And, you know, he scored some really important goals, especially in the second half of the season. AJ, how do you think Cutrone must be feeling now? Because obviously Piontek's bagging the goals. He looks set to start Tuesday night's Coppa semi-final away at Lazio. And his agent, Cutrone's agent, has come out today basically saying, will he stay at AC Milan? We'll see. That's not particularly definitive.
Listen, there's a lot going on right now with people and rumors and Cutrone. And it really is stemming from Piontek's form. And the fact that his agent and his dad were at the Atletico Juve game looking at that. A rumor was it that Atletico was interested. And that's could be very likely, you know. But at the end of the day, the agent says that the agent's job is to make sure the player is A, playing, and B, making money so that he can make money. But I don't think Cutrone cares. He knows this team. It means a lot to him. He's a Milan fan. I almost said Juve for some reason. That was weird. He's a Milan.
That's because I was saying that earlier.
Is that? Yeah, okay, that's what it
was. Yeah,
I
was winding people up.
So he's a Milan fan. He loves the club. He's not upset. You see him celebrating with the boys. You know, he comes on and he's always had this positive attitude. Same when he was a substitute behind Higuain, behind Kalinic and Andre Silva, or I guess technically in front of Silva. But, you know, when he was subbed on for them as well, you never saw a negative attitude from him. You only saw positive emotion and sad emotion when they lost, and that's still how it is. You know, I don't think there's any win to this idea that he's gonna leave or anything like that. I think it's the agent doing an agent's job. You know, you can't fault him for that, wanting to find better opportunities, but at the end of the day, that's to make himself some money too. And as long as Cutrone is happy, you know, give him a renewal, maybe even just say, hey, we want you here, you're part of this team, you're our boy, you're part of the project. Because we can't have one striker And obviously Piontek's fantastic for every reason Matt said and every reason everyone said. But remember, this is still just one season. He very well could be a one-season wonder. So we don't want to go in the next season and sell Cutrone and then be stuck with a dud. So I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he's here to stay, and at least for a few more years.
Matty, what if he's not going to start tomorrow night in the Cup, what kind of games should Cutrone be starting now? Would you start him against the, you know, with all respect, lesser sides at home just to keep him fresh, to give him some minutes? Because at the moment he's only getting sort of, you know, 20 minutes at the end of games when Piontek's pretty much already won, is it?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I would start him in the Coppa Italia games personally, because that way he is getting some minutes. You know he can score. Even if he doesn't score, you know, currently we're getting goals from elsewhere on the field. But I don't think he's going anywhere. He's 19 years old. No 19-year-old really has a right to be starting for a huge club. I know that, you know, Donnarumma is, Piontek is young as well. But in, like, the big scheme of things, it's pretty rare to have such a young kid starting game after game. And last season, he had a good run of games, so I think he got used to that.
Mm-hmm.
But like AJ said, he doesn't look sad. He's always happy. He's always giving 110%. Even when he's played 95 or 90 minutes and in stoppage time, he's still chasing those balls like a 15-year-old kid, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, he's just full of energy, and I don't see him going anywhere yet. I think if he was 24 or 25 and he needed that game time to continue his career, I could see him leaving then, but not quite yet.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, he obviously had to wait a while, given how highly rated he was in the Primavera system. He had to wait a while for his breakthrough into the first team.
Right.
Do you think that he'll be equally as patient because of what's going on with Piontek?
Oh, is that me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, go for it, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I mean, I think, again, with you guys all really pretty much touched on it, right? And, you know, it's funny how we were talking about, you know, at the January transfer window, how Milan, where there were discussions about bringing in a third striker, right? So the fact that a guy like Cutrone, as you just mentioned, a young player with a lot of potential, a lot of upside, who also is trying to break into the national team, I think that maybe is something that plays into it. Maybe he's thinking, well, they got their guy, Piontek. He's the kind of the talk of the town. He's getting all the attention. He got the big money move. He's getting all the minutes. Cutrone may be thinking, well, I have an opportunity to possibly break into the national team and maybe be the starter, you know, when it's all said and done. Because obviously, you know, the national team isn't sorted out up front. But I don't think – I just don't see him leaving. I think maybe this is a negotiation tactic, a ploy by his agent to maybe get increased wages or you have some certain guarantees with his contract or as a player. But, I think you guys touched on it all, that this could be something where it's just – he's maybe just kind of feeling it out. He's maybe trying to give the board, the management, a little of a heads up saying, look, we have – don't forget about Cutrone. Cutrone is a very valuable piece of the puzzle. He's a guy that does deserve minutes, so make sure you are giving him a go. Make sure you do – you know, kind of relay that to him and make it feel like as though he is an important piece of the puzzle. I don't see him as a guy that would be take it to heart that they did get a striker. I think at the end of the day, you're looking around, everyone's part of the long-term objective, and that obviously is to not only make the Champions League, but to consistently be there year in and year out. And I think, again, having Piontek, Cutrone, who fit the mold of what I think Azidis has been adamant with, is that in that getting younger players that have resale value is something that he really wants. And you can notice with the entire transfer policy of Paqueta, obviously Conti, you know, Calabria, the guys that they really want to keep, but also the guys that they're interested in. Mm. You know, we talked about the wingers that they're looking at in the summer from France, you know, with Maximin and, of course, Ismail Assar were two names mentioned. So I think, again, in the long term, Cutrone is a guy that definitely wants to stay. I think he definitely knows that he has to work his way in to get minutes. And I think, again, giving him the opportunity to play against Lazio, I don't have a problem with it myself, because I think, again, you can we did get a glimpse of what Piontek is capable of doing, and even off the bench in that game against Napoli in the league, he came off the bench and he showed you what he can do and what he can, how big of an impact he can make immediately. So I think giving Cutrone that nod of confidence and saying, hey, we back you in a big match against a big club, go out there and show us what you can do, but just know that you do have Piontek kind of, you know, in the background waiting to come on if we need him. So I think, again, Milan need to have at least two options up front. And I just thought I wouldn't look too much into this.
Matt, I have a question for you, and I'm going to put you on the spot here. It's a little off topic, but to the exact penny, what do you think the combined value of our players is?
Fucking
hell. That's really tough. I would say, honestly, I would probably say around 300 million. And the reason why I say that is because how much do you think Donnarumma is right now at this point?
Probably 100
million.
How much
do you think Piontek's?
100.
How much do you think Piontek is worth right now? And Paqueta?
Well, 60,
not 35, not 30.
I'd say 50,
value
is about
70 million each.
Exactly. So, and then you start looking at some of the other players, Romagnoli, right? Mm-hmm. You start looking at certain players that we have in this team, even Suso, even in his downtrodden form, 30 to 40. So, I think again, there's a lot of value in this team, but I think more so the fact because it's young and teams that do buy him, they can get a young player that has, a bigger potential. I think we see, again, I think that just goes down to what Gazidis wants, right? You know, the fact that Milan were able to shed Higuain, a declining asset, in my opinion. I still think he could be effective for Chelsea. But I think, again, you know, you have him for a year or two, and, you know, then do you really think you're going to be able to sell him for max money? Juventus are going to have to deal with that because I don't think Chelsea's going to want to keep him, especially if they get, get rid of Sarri. So, I think it wound up being a blessing in disguise for Milan because even if Piontek, let's say, has a slow second season, he still has a good season with Milan, but he kind of is not as prolific. You still have a guy that has the upside and potential to grow into a superstar player. We know what Higuain is. We know what he's not at this moment of his career. And I think, again, if you look at the entire value, back to your main question, I think there's a lot of value in here because of that youth.
Is Higuain's loan at Chelsea, is that 18 months or is that just 12?
No, it's
until
so
the
they
end
have
of the
the
season.
Option. They have the option to they have, yeah. So it's until the end of the season, but then they have an option to either extend it for a full season or buy an outright and pay $36 million over two financial years.
But they won't be able to do that if they've got the transfer ban.
That's what I was getting to. Yeah, so I think it's going to be Juve's problem.
And also, Sarri won't be there. Sarri won't be there come the summer. So
I think he missed out on his only opportunity for a trophy.
If I was Higuain, I'd just refuse to come off. Seems to work. That was mad. No, it's interesting that I think when you look at the value of our squad at the moment, there's a lot of players. Obviously, we've got the core of our team at the moment, which is obviously Donnarumma. You're talking possibly 100 million because of his age and because of what he's shown us. Romagnoli, you could be looking at 80 million if you're sort of going on the Virgil van Dijk kind of rate. Piontek worth a lot of money. Suso's got a release clause of 40 million. But then you've got players like Calabria, who it's kind of hard to put a valuation on him, but honestly, he's probably worth more than 30 million as well.
Yeah, I mean, you figure with how thin that the market for a fullback is.
Yeah, and he's been incredible recently.
The only thing I will say is that is in based off history and just transfer fees of Italians, they don't sell that well outside of Italy.
Yeah, that's true.
So if you look at some of the clubs that would actually be interested in, right? If you think, again, like a Donnarumma, yeah, there would be probably one club in Italy that would be able to buy them, obviously Juve, and then several others around Europe. But a guy like Calabria, do you think a team like an Atletico Madrid would spend 30 to 40 million on him? I don't see that happening just because, again, I don't think Italians do that well outside of Italy.
I think Chelsea have overpaid a
lot
possible. For Serie A.
I think it really depends on, again, they spent, what, 25 or 30 on Zappacosta.
Yeah.
He really doesn't play that much. They spent, like, 25, I think, on Emerson.
He's
starting to get a little bit of activity. But
Emerson's
I just
a
think,
baller,
again,
man. I watched that cup
final.
I
think
he's
very good.
Yeah,
he's good.
Yeah, he's a very good. He's finally getting an opportunity. But I think, again, Italians, based off track record, they don't really sell that well outside of Italy. Again, you can even use Ciro Immobile when he was sold to Borussia Dortmund. He went to Sevilla, and then he came back to Torino and Lazio, and it's just comfortable. And I think that's something that you really have to look at with Italian players if you should go the route of selling them. I mean, bar Donnarumma and Romagnoli, I think their skills translate elsewhere. But Calabria could be one of those cases where maybe he's comfortable, obviously, entire career at Milan, the youth system, everything like that. Mm-hmm. So just want to point that out.
that's a comforting thing, is that like a lot of the players that you would consider to be in our young core, the likes of Donnarumma, Calabria, you know, Cutrone, they're all boyhood fans of the club. So like, you know, that's a big deal. It means that hopefully we've basically got that next generation of players lined up for the foreseeable future.
Also, I forgot to mention Bakayoko, should they get the option, right? I mean, Bakayoko's value is probably more than his actual option. Right?
Oh, yeah. That $35 million looks like a bargain at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And who,
for his age, for his quality, absolutely.
Mm. How old is Bakayoko? Yeah. Is he 24 or 25?
24, I think.
I mean, that's right for the picking, right? Yeah. There, man.
He's 3 years until he hits his prime, in theory.
No, I'm in the prime of my life right now, 25.
Like, I mean, you could also look at that too. He fits the team. He loves the team. You know, he has Champions League experience at Monaco. He had a great season there. I mean, $35 million for a midfielder. You know, looks like that's the magic number, right? $35 million for him, Paqueta, and Piontek.
Mm. Well, speaking of Bakayoko, Kessie said after the game against Empoli that the team have got to follow Bakayoko's example. AJ, Kessie was much better on Friday night.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. I don't know what you wanted me to say there. Yeah, sorry. That was good.
Yeah, all right, nice one.
I don't think he was ever bad, honestly. I think the only thing that Kessie really sucks at is shooting, and I just don't get it. You know, I don't think he needs to do that. He gets in these great offensive positions, and I'd say like maybe 8 times out of 10, there's a pass to someone who should be shooting, who is an offensive player, but he'd rather just send it sky high. And for once, you know, it went in the net this time. So props to him. Unfortunately, I think that's going to kickstart his desire to keep shooting. And I think in the next game, probably on Tuesday, we're going to see like some 36-yard shots from him going absolutely fucking nowhere.
Let's have it. That's what I said. Maddie, if we have Bakayoko, Kessier and Paqueta all in form, is it the best midfield in the league?
Oh man, I have no idea. Yes. only because I'm an AC Milan fan, I'm gonna say yes.
You're biased, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't watch Juve, and
Juve's the only,
I got it. Yeah, and they're gonna be the only one who's gonna be able to compete with having the best midfield in the league.
I don't know about that
because I think, again, it's tough to really compare midfield to midfield based off the formation and the shape. Mm-hmm. But I mean, can you really look at this midfield and, you know, Juve's, and you have to look at Napoli's too. Alan Fabian Ruiz is sensational right now.
Yeah.
So like, and it's tough to kind of look at that because most of the time you look at their midfield and you think it's when they're playing 4-3-3 or 4-3-1-2. You know, look at they've been having over the years Hamsik, Alan, Zielinski. Mm. Sometimes if they're going Alan, Fabian Ruiz, Zielinski, like on their day, like that's a lot of talent.
Yeah.
Like, that's very balanced, you know. So
Roma have a good,
I don't know. It's right up there. It's right up there. I mean, the based off the, you know, Paqueta's brought a ton of balance to the team. I think he's kind of, you know, immediately hit the ground running, playing a huge role for this team really since he got, you know, over to Milan. But and I think, again, based off form right now, it's hard to argue that Milan's midfield is performing the best.
Lads, Bakayoko has 4 brothers.
Okay.
I think we should sign them all.
Cool.
Is that like the Paul Pogba thing? He has like two like kind of like below average brothers, one that actually plays at Atlanta United now.
Yeah,
I was about to say, one just moved to the MLS.
How many brothers have we signed now? Because we did it with Jose Mauri, we did Donnarumma.
We got to sign Enoch.
We've done
Balotelli
with people in the past. Like, why do we do that?
Yeah.
Sign Balotelli's brother.
Enoch, did we really sign him?
No.
Oh, I was like, that'd be funny. Enoch's a clown.
Yeah,
we signed. Didn't Milan sign Paqueta's brother? Like, isn't he playing in like the teens or something like that? Like, I think that's true, right?
No,
I saw he went somewhere. I didn't think it was.
At Monza. His older brother's playing for Monza.
Yeah, that's
which is
what it
the
was.
Team
yeah,
that Berlusconi owns.
That's
yes,
what it, yeah.
yes.
That's what it is. Okay, there's a connection there. Okay,
yeah.
There you go.
That's pretty cool. So I reckon we should have half a team of Bakayokos for next season. Just sign all.
Do they all play different positions?
Yep. One of them plays left back for Paris FC.
Yeah, Paris FC.
Paris FC, yeah. One of them's not even a footballer. Don't even know.
That's actually a thing, like Paris FC is an actual thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was like because they didn't have the rights, like it's like FIFA didn't have the rights to call it like Paris Saint-Germain, they always called it Paris FC.
No, so what happened was there was PSG like merged between a Paris FC and like Saint-Germain, I don't remember what they were called, became PSG, but then the other, like the people who didn't want to merge with them became Paris FC like the next season or something, and they started from the bottom. And they're not good.
Jeez, that's wild. No,
yeah, started from the bottom, still there.
They're in the they're in the second division, so they're not too bad.
Yeah, but second division, but France is like eighth division.
Don't say
here.
Farmers. Oh, man. Don't say farmers. Yeah, so that's cool. One more thing from the game on Friday night. Ricardo Rodriguez, he's put together a good string of games now. I'll open that up to whoever.
Yeah, and he's not even going to start the next one.
Yeah, Laxalt's meant to be starting tomorrow night.
Yeah. Which is crazy to think. Tomorrow's game day. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah,
that's crazy, right? I was looking at it. I was like, is it Wednesday or Tuesday? I'm like, oh, shit, it's Tuesday. Like, but yeah, Rodriguez, he's one of those players that I think the most like Kessié. The fan base is so divided on. I think there's so many people that are like, Rodriguez is such a great player, but, you know, Milan Twitter will tell you he's this. Or then there's people that say, he's a good player, I just don't think he's this. Like, I think the kind of the jury's still out on him. I think he looks at times a little bit, like, slow moving the ball. He doesn't look that, like, you know, smooth in possession and passing. But he does a good job. Like, I can't really pinpoint any case where he's been – just absolutely awful.
I think you are spot on with that. He is slow and kind of like sloppy on, not sloppy, but like it's just not pristine on the ball.
He's not like your prototypical looking left back.
Exactly. And he does struggle against like really fast wings sometimes. Thinking back to like the Super Cup game, I believe it was Douglas Costa was just running circles around him. Oh. And then the game after that, whoever we played there, I remember their winger did the same thing. And I thought, wow, maybe he is a liability on the team, but he really isn't bad. It was just those two games he was getting beat by some fast guys, and so that would be his biggest downfall. My opinion is he's really not quick, and when someone comes at him with like fancy footwork, he kind of struggles to break him down. But once he has the ball, it doesn't look pretty, but it gets the job done. And
I think he's very crucial to how Milan build out the back, though. I think if you really look at a lot of times, like he makes that, like, because if you look at Donnarumma, will work the ball centrally, then they work the ball to the left. He's making that extra pass to kind of like break open the counterattack or break open into the next phase of the game or the next phase of the buildup. I think, again, he's not, you know, quick, as you just mentioned, Anthony, but I think what he does is he does a lot of things that are maybe tough to quantify, but I think he's a key part to that defense and what we do in the back.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you don't see him run with the ball often, but he does, you know, run up the side.
He can cross too.
Yeah, he crosses. The cross
when he's in those advanced positions, like we saw against Atalanta, where he crossed into Piontek. But again, you could also look at the fact that again, Kessié made that run to kind of bring, I forgot who else was with him, bring him with him to open up that cross. So like, I think there's a lot of things that that you look at with Kessié and Rodriguez is that maybe on paper you may look at it and say, all he does is fire shots, or, you know, maybe he's not so graceful in possession. But I think there's a lot of things that are tough to quantify with him that do help in their certain area.
I've been critical of Ricardo Rodriguez, certainly like throughout the early part of the season, because I looked at him as a player who did lots of things to an average quality, but wasn't outstanding at anything. And when, you know, like AJ mentioned, when he was coming up against quick, tricky wingers, that kind of set him back. And also when the team was on the back foot, he wasn't able to showcase arguably his biggest strength, which is his delivery, his, you know, his vision in the in sort of the attacking phases of games. We've started to see that a bit more recently with the team on the front foot a bit more. Like you mentioned, that cross into Piontek at Atalanta was an absolutely gorgeous cross, and an even better finish. I think that it says a lot as well, given that we now have, really, we have three fit left backs, and Gattuso's still picking Ricardo Rodriguez. He obviously has a lot of faith in his skill set, basically. And I think it's for the exact reason that I said, in that he does a lot of things pretty well.
He's a very balanced left back.
Yeah, and that's ideal when you've got someone on the other side like Calabria or Conte in the last game who likes to get forward a lot more and relies on their delivery. So yeah, Gattuso obviously trusts him with the system, and like you say, building out of the back, he's a huge part of that. I think his passing's actually pretty good. He's always an option as well out wide when we're playing out from the back, which is pretty massive for the way that we tried to build out. So yeah, I think that tomorrow will be interesting because we'll get a look at Laxalt and we'll perhaps see what we're missing there. But I think Laxalt still has a role in this squad because he can play as a winger as well. Some people wouldn't be happy with that, but he's done it to an adequate level before. And then obviously we've got Ivan Strinic as well, who had a hugely impressive World Cup. So we're pretty stacked in that position, and at the moment Rick Rod holds the
position Strinic
at the
back?
Top of the pile.
Is he getting caught?
Okay. Yeah, he's back. Back.
Yeah. So, I can't imagine him being rushed into action before the start of the season, because it's obviously a complicated thing with him. It's not like a standard injury where you get sort of your 6 weeks if it's a hamstring problem or whatever. This is a heart issue. So obviously it needs to be treated a lot more delicately. He may start by getting 10 minutes here, 20 minutes there.
Right, how similar to how Conte was eased in once he came back.
Yeah, exactly. So we might see that, and I hope we do, because I was kind of excited to see him, to be honest. So yeah, we'll see how they play that with the left-back situation. Obviously mentioning Laxalt, we've got a game tomorrow night. We're recording this on a Monday evening. Coppa Italia semi-final, first leg. We're looking to reach our third Coppa Italia final in 4 seasons. That'd be pretty cool. We've got to go through Lazio again. AJ, how do you want us to play this first leg? Do you want us to go and try and get a draw so we can do it at San Siro? Are we going there for the win? You know what?
Yeah, I think we go for the win. You know, I think a win away. Well, I don't think I know. A win away is obviously massive because you get the away points, the away goal also. So I think we're going to go in there and go for the win. Lazio is a very beatable team. It's a team we've beaten confidently, you know, in the past few seasons. And I don't remember how our first game against them went this season. Did we win that or was it a draw?
Drew 1-1.
Okay, yeah, 1-1 draw. And I don't think we're going to have some of the same problems as we had in that game, you know, with Higuain obviously being a shell of his former self in that game. We're not going to have those issues. I think we're going to go through and go in confidently, and we're going to run through it. I think we know that this is a very winnable tournament this year with Juve already out, and with the other finals being either Fiorentina or Atalanta. You know, we beat Atalanta 3-0. Sure, Fiorentina beat us.
3-1.
Sorry, 3-1. Sure, Fiorentina beat us in our game, but that was weird, and that was our last Higuain game. Or not last, but one of. I really don't see them being a problem for us either. I think Lazio is going to be the toughest part of this tournament for us now, and we could beat them. You know, it really depends on Lazio's mindset. If they're thinking the same way, which I'm sure they are, then they might push a little bit harder. But they have the Rome Derby right after this game. Yeah, so
right, on Saturday,
they're probably not going to field the strongest 11, and they might play for a draw and try and push it against us at San Siro, which is a terrible idea, but that might be the route they have to take. Especially given that they need to win in the league to get to fourth place where we are at, and beating Roma would be a massive leap for them, because obviously Roma is 1 point behind us and I think 2 above them. So that's a much more important game for them, in my opinion. I think they're going to kind of sit back in this Coppa Italia game.
Yeah, and also they don't really have a choice but to make a lot of changes, because they've got 5 injuries. Jordan Lukaku's out, Wallace is out, Berisha's out, Bastos is out, and Luis Felipe, they're all out. They're going to miss the game. Stefan Radu is suspended for tomorrow night, so they're going to have to make a lot of changes. I think
it's going to be a makeshift lineup for them.
Yeah, and I mean,
yeah, it is for sure.
At Simone Inzaghi, I saw like the headline of his pre-match press conference earlier, basically saying that the team's in a mess at the moment and he's just going to have to patch it up tomorrow night. So I'm with AJ. I think we go for the win tomorrow, Maddie.
Yeah, I think we absolutely go for the win, because with all of their injuries and players out, I mean, this is a great opportunity to take advantage of the away goals And if we start a, you know, our a great starting 11, we're going to come away with a win here. And I think this San Siro is definitely an intimidating place to play, and will be much harder for them to make a comeback. We've seen crazier things happen. But I think that we definitely come away with a win tomorrow. But we also have to keep in mind that we have Sassuolo this weekend. So we can't, you know, go all out, but I definitely think that we are going aggressive for the win.
Absolutely agree with. I think, again, with this one too, if this was played earlier in the season, then I would say, okay, Milan are probably going to try to say, let's get out and dodge. Obviously, with all the injuries taking their toll, I think at that point, Milan were just trying to weather the storm, and they did a good job of that. But given the form that Milan's in right now, I don't think it's unfair to, even despite, again, Lazio being a good team despite their form, I don't think it's unfair to say that Milan should and want to win this game. I think, again, at this point of the, at this stage of the season, with the way that Lazio are in, the way the form Milan's in, they should want to go for the victory and try to position this match, this tie, where they can kind of get in a comfortable position for the first leg, and then they could kind of prioritize and plan for that second leg. Obviously, as you guys just mentioned, Lazio have the Rome derby on the weekend, or Milan has Sassuolo at home. So I think, again, Milan are in a little bit of a better position there, where they're getting guys back, they're a little bit healthier, they don't have as tough of a match as Lazio do coming up. So, I think, again, Milan are really going to make – they're going to put out a good lineup. The projected ones indicate that. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, going for a victory here is definitely the right approach.
Yeah, I'll just read through the predicted 11. This is what Sky have, and they're usually pretty bang on about this. Donnarumma in goal, obviously. Calabria, right back. Musaccio, Romagnoli. Laxalt at left back. Midfield three of Kessié, Bakayoko, and Paqueta. Suso on the right, Piontek up front, Barini on the left. So they have Barini starting. Any changes that any of you would make to that lineup?
No, honestly, I think it's right where it should be. Castillo probably is a late sub for Barini, or maybe even Suso, honestly, depending on who's playing better. But I think it's solid. I don't have any issues with Barini starting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Either way, I think again. Yeah, giving again, I think it's important to give guys like Laxalt, Borini even, you know, ensure them that they do have their role. You want to keep these guys fresh. You want to keep them, their legs loose and, you know, in a good position where if they do need to come on off the bench and are called on later in the season, they can kind of come in without having that rawness to them. A perfect example is Castillejo. Giving a match like him that he had on Friday, you can kind of expect him to kind of come into matches and not really skip a beat.
Right, and keep them happy too. You know, at the end of the day, all players want to play. So that confidence boosted them knowing that they get a role, you know, like Pepe Reina, for example. Like, he is a backup keeper. That's someone who's not going to play many games. He knows his role is going to be cup matches. Obviously, he's injured now and he's not playing anymore, but that's one of the roles of these guys. And I think Barini knows that's kind of his fit, as well as Laxalt. So we definitely got to give it to him when it's their opportunities.
And Barini is...
So what about Trone, do you start him? I mean, he needs playing time just as much as
I agree with you, except I think you don't stop Piontek right now. I think he's so hot that if you were to give him a break, I think it would be almost detrimental. I think it would have the opposite effect that people would want on him. I think you just keep playing him until he starts to fade and needs a rest. But for now,
as much
just keep
as I've
going.
Talked about is, you know, the problem that we face with Cutrone's game time, you don't fix what isn't broken. You know, you've got to keep Piontek in there because he's in a rhythm. He's in the form of his life right now. And what you hope is, the ideal situation is that he scores a couple of goals and we're sort of comfortably in the lead on the hour mark, and you can give Cutrone a bit more than 15, 20 minutes at the end of the game just to keep him fresh.
I can agree with that.
So, fingers crossed we can get a positive result.
Predictions, since it's tomorrow? Since people are going to listen to this and probably be at the game's going to be over already?
I just don't think that... I think our record at the Olympico is pretty bad. This is a cup game, so I feel like anything could happen. I don't expect us to get beat, but I don't expect us to win either. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. Yeah. Immobile to score for them. and fuck it, Barini's scoring for us.
Wow. Yep.
There you go. Yeah, AJ?
I'm going to go 2-0 for us. I think we're just too hot right now. We haven't lost in 7 games. Lazio have lost 3 straight. They're really not in good form. Their record against us is usually a draw. I just checked it, and they have like 10 draws against us in the last, I think it was 21 games. But we have 6 wins there. So I think for the most part, we're going to walk through them. I just don't think they have anything for us that we haven't seen. I think Immobile is kind of burned out from his couple of great seasons there. I mean, really, where even is he in the Ken and Campanieri race?
I think he's like 11 goals, I think.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, so that's still solid, but not Piontek good, so fuck him.
Maddie?
I am the same, 2-0 to us, and I think that, yeah, I think we're going to dominate the game, or at least control. I don't know about dominate, but control.
Yeah,
for the majority of it.
Matt, whatever you say, I'm going to put a bet on. So
I'm actually going to go 2-1 Milan.
Right.
I think Milan will do the job on the road. I do think that Immobile will get a goal on Donnarumma. He actually kind of made a joke to Donnarumma on Instagram saying, "Happy birthday, my friend. Tomorrow I have a surprise for you." I'm going to say Immobile gets a goal. Maybe they gets a goal late and then Milan hang on. Maybe they go up 2-0 and then Immobile gets one late, but Milan found a way to hang on and you'll get the result that they need in the first leg.
Oh, I can't wait till we sign Immobile in the summer.
Ugh.
God damn it.
Yeah, so yeah. Oh, you guys are more confident than I am, and I hope you're right, because we have a real chance to get some silverware this season, and that would be huge for some of the younger members of the squad, without a doubt.
It would be amazing.
Be so, huge for some of the younger fans, too, you know?
Haven't seen any. Matt Robson.
I think
and all those,
Matt Robson. shout out to Leicester. Oh, man.
Sat their manager.
Hey, Maddie, would you go to... never mind, I'm not even going to say it. Never mind.
No.
I was going to make a joke. Just continue.
Maddie, you're coming over to the UK, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm coming over to visit you, man.
Yeah, sick. We're hopefully going to meet up. I need to ring in sick from work. And then I can't believe I've just said that.
I was debating on whether or not to say that, but I don't know if your coworkers listen to this or not.
I don't think they do. I think
one does. Okay. I know of one that does.
So yeah, hopefully me and Maddie are going to meet up, because he's coming over for the Everton v Liverpool game at Goodison Park. You must be pretty pumped for that.
I am beyond excited.
To lose 3-0.
Hey, as long as I can see someone score in blue, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I'm rooting for you, Maddie. I'm rooting for you. I want Liverpool to lose. I think this is a losable game for them because it's a derby and they're in shit form, and gives Tottenham another opportunity to catch up.
Mate, you just lost to Burnley. I don't think you're catching anyone.
Okay, yeah, the only thing you're catching is the relegation, so fuck off.
Oh yeah, I know, I accepted that a long time. We're going to win tomorrow night though.
We're winning the league.
Yeah, well actually, Maddie, you're not going to be on next week, but the week after that you can report back on your trip.
I will.
Right, so this is the first time we're doing it. It's question time. Before we recorded, we put a tweet out earlier today to get people to ask their questions using the hashtag SempreMilanPod. And we got a few good questions. So I'll start with one. I'll open it up to you first, AJ, and then we can go around. A guy called @BushIzzle. his Twitter name is 10th of Feb Aquarian. So I don't know if that's a horoscope thing or what, but. Basically, asked, will Cutrone accept playing second fiddle to Piontek? We kind of discussed that earlier, so I'll move on to his second question. How come Calabria gets no recognition from Milan Twitter or Milan supporters?
As far as the first question, yes, I think he will play second fiddle. I think he's happy to be here in any capacity. We kind of touched on that already, so I'll just graze past it. As far as why does Calabria not get recognition from Milan Twitter? Because Milan Twitter is a shitty place, and... there's a lot of bad opinions that go around. I throw some shitty ones around too, so it is what it is. I think Calabria is fantastic, and I see a lot of praise for him. But yeah, there's a very vocal minority that likes to shit on good players and the team, and no matter what they do. And it sounds like those are the people you're following. So what I say to you is branch out, follow me if you're not, follow Madison, follow Matt,
yes,
follow,
there we go.
Follow Ollie, don't follow Isaac, and just, you know, broaden your horizons a little bit. I think you'll see some recognition out there.
Mm. Yeah, Maddie, how much do you love Calabria?
Yeah, I love him. I think he's great. I'm going to touch on the first question as well, though. Mm-hmm. I don't think any professional athlete is okay with playing second fiddle. It's not in their DNA to be okay with being backup.
Yeah.
I think he wants to be starter, but I think that he is a smart enough player to know that Piontek is in better form right now, and he has to accept that. But I definitely, you know, assume that he is working his ass off in training to try and take that number one spot, because if he wasn't trying to take that number one spot, he would not be a very good professional athlete.
Yeah.
And the second point, I'm agreeing with AJ. Twitter in general is a terrible place where people share terrible opinions. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why he gets no love on Twitter.
Matt?
Yeah, I agree. I think, again, you know, we touched upon Cutrone Piontek's situation. I think it's, as a youngster, you know, he was kind of he was the talk of the town, right? Even with Higuain, everyone was calling Cutrone to play because they love him. He's a kind of our darling, our baby, you know. Mm. But once Piontek came in and he hit the ground running, scoring goals and winning games by himself, I think it's only natural that maybe Cutrone's, you know, I mean, obviously we see the Instagram posts, we see that he's still happy, obviously he still is. But, you know, in the back of his mind, he's saying, I'm good enough to start for Milan. So I think, you know, again, that should be a service motivation for him to compete with Piontek, have that friendly competition within the squad. But Calabria gets his praise. I don't understand, you know, why anyone would even – I see quite a bit of it. You know, maybe it's tough to quantify in certain cases, but he does, you know, quite a bit for this team on both ends of the pitch. And I think, you know, maybe if you wanted to say, why doesn't Calabria get the attention and recognition he deserves league-wide, then that's something he had. But I think, you know, Milan's fan base overall, again, you know, as toxic as it may be sometimes, I think the general consensus is that Calabria is a player that's really well-rated.
Yeah, I agree. I see a lot of Calabria praise on Twitter. Maybe it's because, like AJ said, I'm a bit more selective with who I follow. Tend to follow people who only actually watch games.
Do you follow Nick?
Who?
Nick!
No idea who you're talking about, mate. Oh, you mean Mauro?
Fair.
Mauro.
Yeah.
No, and I think the thing as well with Calabria, and this doesn't just apply to him, it applies to other players within the squad. The bad things that people say about them stand out more. So if your take on Calabria is that he's a bad player and he can't defend, that will instantly become more prominent on Twitter because you'll have more people disagreeing with it. It doesn't mean that that's what the vast majority of people think. It's just that that's what you're seeing at that time. So, yeah, I wouldn't read too much into that, to be honest. Bushizzle. He's actually asked another question as well, and this is quite a good one. I'll start with you again, AJ. He says, I know it might be too early to say this, but do you think our current squad, with some quality summer signings, is UCL ready? Do you think we'll be fit enough, taking into consideration the injury crisis during December? Are we ready fitness and performance-wise for the Champions League?
Well, it depends on what your expectation of ready is. I mean, if your expectation is making it out of the knockout stages, or if your expectation is making it to the final, I think we're good enough now to get out of the group stage. I don't think we would go all the way. In fact, I think at best we could hope for a quarterfinal exit with this squad right now. Realistically, probably around a 16 with like finishing second in the group or something. So I guess yes and no. It just depends on what your aspirations are for it. I mean, obviously, ultimately, everyone wants to win the Champions League. I just think realistically, that's not the goal for next season. If we do get Champions League, I think the goal will be, you know, try our hardest, have fun, participation medal, and hopefully secure it again.
You sound like
compete.
Such an American.
I think compete. I think that's the biggest thing in that tournament, right? I think the plan has always been get to the Champions League, do it consistently, and then start to kind of slowly work your way up into becoming a European powerhouse again.
Mm.
So I think again, I thought about this in my mind about the squad. Would this team be ready the way it is? And we see this so many times with clubs where they finally get into the playoffs
And then they kind of say, okay, well, this is the same method we're going to use to play into the, not playoffs, excuse me, to a Champions League. And then this is the same team we're going to use. Milan obviously still need wingers. They still need probably another midfielder. They probably still need another defender, in my opinion. But if you really look at it, you know, and you add a couple pieces here and there, you make a couple sales. Obviously, Silva comes off the books. You have that Champions League money. You know, financial fair play is kind of something that we can kind of get past. I think there's no reason, there's reason to believe that we can spend and add versus subtracting.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with that. And he does mention sort of with some quality summer signings. That also needs to, you know, you need to gauge the expectation on that, especially with FFP and stuff like that.
Yeah, if you ask me, I think, again, if you keep most of the players, it's more about adding depth. With the exception of the wingers, I think they do need to add, like, a winger or two. But in the midfield, again, if you keep that midfield there with Bonaventura coming back, I think another year of Lucas Biglia in the midfield. But get a guy like Sandro Tonali in the midfield for the future who can play his minutes in the league. Maybe get that debut in the Champions League if we do make it. Obviously, we see what youngsters are able to do. Italian youngsters are able to do in the Champions League, Zaniolo being one of them. I think, again, if you can make those sort of additions, and I think that's what Gazidis and Leonardo and Maldini, they really want to. I think there's no reason to, you know, doubt Milan can do some quite a bit in their first return should they make it.
Yeah, I think you've hit a nail on the head there, Matt. The thing for me, like you said, is all about competing. It's just getting back into that elite competition. We've looked on this season, I hate to say this, with a little bit of jealousy towards Inter, because obviously they were drawn in a group with Spurs and Barcelona. They've had the big European nights back on Tuesdays at San Siro, and I want that to be us, basically. I'm
not against Barcelona, though.
Why not? We've beaten them before twice at San Siro, so we could do it again.
Yeah, but we always crashed out in the turn.
Yeah, but we had a
completely different team.
We had an arguably worse team in 2013-14.
But I think we started Bonera, Mexis, and like Zapata defensively.
We
kept a clean sheet.
We won 2-0 that game. I think it was Muntari and Boateng, I think.
We sort of basically have Barcelona's number, Boateng, which is quite funny. So yeah, I just want us to be back there. I just want us to be playing the top teams. I want a sold-out San Siro on a midweek night. I want to be able to go and watch the team in the Champions League, which I haven't been able to do yet. So let's just get back there. Maddie, agree?
Yeah, I agree. I think, like you said, the most important part is getting there than staying there. You know, getting there than finishing eighth next season, in my opinion, will be considered a failure, even though we were in Champions League that season. I think next season, getting out of the group stage and then finishing in the top three of the league, I can honestly see us finishing second, and if we play our cards right against Juve, maybe taking the championship.
Whoa, easy there, Tiger.
I love that. I don't think that's that hot of a take. I think you're really starting to see, you know, the old guard, the Juventus shell, that foundation deteriorating these past couple years. Right, Buffon's gone, Barzagli's obviously a non-factor, but Chiellini and Bonucci are being exposed. The midfield is not the type of midfield that really can win games. And, you know, Allegri could be gone. So what type of manager are they going to get in? I just think, again, there's a lot of moving parts with Juve. I think over the next couple of years is when this reign, you can really expect it to kind of, end for Juve. But, of course, I wouldn't be surprised if they keep it going. But I think there really is room for someone to kind of creep in and overthrow at least Napoli.
Yeah, the worst thing that could happen for Juve is to lose Allegri without a doubt, because I feel like he's the one that's kind of holding it all together at the moment. They've got an aging squad, as you mentioned, a squad that is full of serial winners. They're used to winning, perhaps not on a European stage, but certainly winning everything domestically for the last God knows how many years. But I can't see them not winning the league while they're still attracting the kind of players that they are. I think their recruitment over the last couple of years has been pretty good.
When do you think, or how many titles do you think they'll win in a row before someone actually dethrones them?
As in from now?
Well, yeah, I mean, assuming they're going to win this year, obviously. Yeah. So eight straight. Beyond this year, how many do you think it'll take for them to finally be kicking off their perch?
Another five after this.
Really?
Wow.
No way.
Yeah.
No way.
Well,
no.
I think
we definitely win the league in the next 5 years.
No.
On the path that we're going on.
We are so far. Everyone else in the league is so far behind them at the moment. It's scary.
But I think Matt's really right. I mean, they are aging.
They're 13 points ahead. They've won 22 out of 25 games. That is fucking ridiculous.
Okay, yes, but just that 1 year makes so much difference of age. I mean, look at Ronaldo. Their best player is 34. Like, I'm not saying Ronaldo's on the decline.
He'll be banging
absolutely.
Until he's 38.
No, yeah, but if you look at Ronaldo is banging them in, but look at Dybala. Mm-hmm. Dybala is at, you're compromising his production, his development.
He's been good
so,
recently,
right,
though.
You look
he's been
at
scoring
it.
Goals recently.
No, I agree with you, but I think, again, you really start to see when a team like Ronaldo, it always revolves around him, even with Ibrahimovic when it was at Milan. Mm-hmm. It revolved around him and his production. I'm not saying that the Juventus aren't better with Ronaldo, but if you look at this year versus last year and previous years, they go from bowing out of the Coppa Italia, possibly bowing out at the round of 16. So now they lose a title or lose a trophy by adding Ronaldo?
Lose out on two trophies.
If they lose to Atletico in the next game or whenever it is,
it's a failure season.
Absolutely. It's a failure. Mm. And I would bet that Ronaldo leaves this summer.
I don't think he leaves. I think he's kind of stuck there. Who could buy him? Who wants to buy him at this point? Honestly?
I mean, he will end up at Man United.
No one's going to spend 100 million euros on him. I bet he goes for 70. But if they can't compete in the Champions League, he doesn't want to be there.
Would you take Ronaldo? Would you take him? I mean,
no.
We need a left wing.
Yeah, but they'll sell him. They might sell Ronaldo.
We got Barini, dude.
They might sell Ronaldo.
They're
going to
have
United.
To with Higuain coming
though.
Back.
Let me ask you, but look what they did with Higuain. They bought Higuain from Napoli at 90 million. He had two fantastic years. Look how quickly Juve were quick to kick him out and get someone better.
Right.
It was an investment, and was Higuain.
But I think that Ronaldo's going to ask to leave.
It's possible. I
wouldn't be surprised. You would it shock you that, let's say, for example, now that we're going down hypothetical lane here, let's say PSG Neymar did wind up leaving PSG. You don't think Ronaldo would want to go and play in Paris?
Oh yeah, he would. I think he'd go to Paris
to help them win a Champions League, which is the thing they've been chasing for years since they had the new ownership.
And I think more likely that they win it than Juve. I mean, obviously we've seen the first legs already, but
if PSG have any sense, though, they'll stay well clear. Because their front three is pretty sorted.
Well, Cavani's, Cavani's on his way out, man.
Put Mbappe up front.
So is Ronaldo. If anything, they'll sign like Lukaku or someone who they can invest a couple years where he can learn.
How can people say that Ronaldo's on his way out? He's the top scorer in the league.
You're going to build a Champions League team around a 34-year-old Ronaldo?
He's by far the fittest footballer there has ever been.
You're right.
You can still build around him, but I just don't think, again, from his perspective, he doesn't have many top flight years left. If he wants to win a Champions League elsewhere and kind of be that guy that says, hey, I delivered a title to PSG or Juve, I think being a natural competitor and a high competitor the way he is, it wouldn't be beyond the realm of possibility for him to say, I mean, I came here to win a Champions League for you guys. I couldn't do it. I want to win elsewhere. It wouldn't be a surprise there. I don't see it happening, but he's got 3 years. It's not like he's 25, 26 where he's got all the time in the world at Juve to deliver what they want. Mm. If Allegri leaves, if certain players leave, I think I could totally see him leaving maybe after year two. But again, to your point, who's going to be able to pay them what they're looking for? He's you assume that this is his last big move.
PSG,
how crazy would it be if
team.
He goes to Barca and retires there?
No chance.
I mean, they need a left wing. They need a left wing. And
well,
we finally get to see Ronaldo and Messi
anymore.
On a team.
Why not go back to Manchester United, kick Lukaku out, and help them up front?
That's what I was saying. I think he'll end up back at Man United. I really think he'll end up back there, even if it's just for one season. He is absolutely adored there. They still sing his song.
And you see what Ibrahimovic was able to do at a later age. He's still able to score goals and be a menace. So it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, I'd like to see that as well. I would love to see that. I wouldn't call myself a huge Ronaldo fan, but I'm a sucker for like a fairy tale return somewhere or something like that.
The return I want to see from Ronaldo is to Las Vegas PD. Fuck that guy.
Oh,
anyways, next question.
He is never coming to the MLS. I can guarantee that. Mm.
Right, next question. I'll go back to you first, AJ. This comes from @chunker007. What do you think of Chiesa replacing Suso on the right side? Obviously, there's been a lot of... This isn't part of the question, but just to give a bit of context, there's been a lot of rumours about us not being able to agree a renewal with Suso and that a team might trigger his release clause. So if we get some money for him, would you like to see it invested in a player like Chiesa?
I don't mind replacing Suso. I think he is a replaceable player, but I honestly don't like Chiesa. I know he's super hyped up and he's got the stats to back it. I just don't like him, and I really don't have a reason behind it.
Personal thing.
Yeah, honestly, it is. It really is. Like, I don't have an explanation. I just would rather him not come to us.
Maddie?
I would not be disappointed if Suso left. I feel like he's been inconsistent every season that he's been here. And I do not know enough about Chiesa to really have an opinion on this.
Well, he's got 5 goals, 7 assists this season from 25 league appearances. So he's averaging a goal or assist sort of every 2 games. It's not really... It's not as good level of production as Sousa. He's marginally younger. He's 21. He's playing for a Fiorentina team that's very up and down. I don't know. Matt, would you like to see him?
I think it's the profile. I think it's the profile that Milan would look for, or most fans would want out of that position. And I really on both flanks. I think, when's the last time that Milan had a prolific winger? Pacey, can dribble, very direct. I mean, even then though, he was like, he had the flair, he had potential, but he was never that sort of like that trailblazing player on the flank. Like he was a piece of the puzzle when he came over the same summer that Ibrahimovic did. So I think again, I like Suso, but I always question and wonder is how much more of a ceiling does he have? Is this kind of where he peaks? Because it's nothing wrong with it. He's a very good player. Obviously, we know what he's capable of, but have teams found him out?
Mm.
Can this translate? We haven't seen him play in the Champions League. We haven't seen him play, be a star in a big club before. So I wouldn't surprise me again for him to go to a team like Atletico and play well. But you know, it also wouldn't surprise me for him to go to a big club like that and kind of go missing. Because again, as those good managers, those good teams that can game plan and strategize against top players, they're starting to see that just prevent him from going to his right. They're seeing overloads on the right flank this season, and he really only has one move. People compare him to Robin all the time, and it's just simply not there. Robin at least has that pace that Suso doesn't have. Suso's not really fast. He's not. Like, I mean, yeah, you want to throw the FIFA ratings out there. He's an 82 pace. Like,
that's wrong.
I mean, he's not fast. Mm. He's got good skill and good dribbling ability, and he's pretty fast out of his first or second step, but in terms of counterattacking with him, he's not that fast.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's,
but I do like Chiesa. I think his abilities will do translate at a bigger club. Obviously, Napoli, Inter, Juve. Not that they need another winger, but damn, they'll probably go after him. And Milan obviously are going to need wingers, but I think it looks as though that Milan may go to the French league and. Again, if you're looking for a good, really good dribbler, Maximin is one of the best, the first or second best dribbler statistically in Europe. And I think, again, he's very raw, but it really depends on the fee, though, right? I think, again, if Fiorentina domestically, they're going to ask, if it's a domestic sale, they're going to ask for 50 to 60. They are.
Yeah. I can see Douglas Costa leaving Juve and he ends up there, follows Bernardeschi down that kind of route. Final question then, and then we'll wrap this up. Someone here, there were rumours in the Spanish press. I don't really pay attention to the Spanish press that much because they are like the worst of the worst when it comes to transfer rumours.
Don Balón is awful.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it was Don Balón. I think it was AS or something like that. Basically, saw a rumour that Milan are preparing an offer for Gareth Bale. I'll ask you all quickly, would you like to see Bale join Milan, yes or no, AJ?
That was Don Balón. So basically, the rumor is completely bullshit. It was never the case. Never gonna happen.
All right, hypothetically.
But I like him. I would take him. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the boy since he was playing right back.
No,
fuck you.
Yes, but I would have to see obviously what the fee is, right? Yeah, Real Madrid aren't just going to sell him for $50 million.
No.
I think there's only going to be a select amount of clubs that actually can afford his wages, mm-hmm. and I think Milan are going for a younger profile in pretty much every position. Mm. With that being said, I think again, if you are Milan and you do qualify for Champions League, you need champion-like players. So a guy like Bale obviously has won Champions League trophies before. He has scored in the Champions League. That great goal he had, I think it was last Champions League final, the one before. Mm-hmm. So again, you want those types of big name players, but I just wonder and I'm really concerned about his injury record. I think a guy like them in Italy, maybe it's a little bit too much of a risk there and something that I would probably bypass.
Would you take a straight swap with him and Suso, or maybe Suso plus a little bit of money?
Thing, is it? Yeah.
If it's cash, Suso and cash for Bale, I probably would. I think Bale's a player that is worth taking a risk on. I think at his age, he still has a lot more to give. But I see a lot of clubs steering clear of that because I think, again, Real Madrid aren't going to sell him at a discount price. He once was the world's most expensive transfer, so I don't think they're going to take a haircut on any deal involving him.
Bale needs a haircut.
So is Kaká.
Yeah, man.
You know, I would be willing to bet, if not bet, but I'd be surprised if they did give us a cut deal on him, only because we've had a pretty good relationship with Real Madrid in the past. So that wouldn't be the biggest surprise to me. I think the biggest hurdle would be wages.
Wages. I think, again, there's a really good possibility that Manchester United want him. But it just when it comes to these big players and their big wage demand, the problem is that they can only go in at they can only fit at a select few clubs that can actually afford them. I think again they're all nice players and it's all great to kind of dream about big time players like Bale. But I think again you could probably on one hand name five clubs who can actually afford him, and you can obviously rule out a Barcelona. You can rule out certain clubs being able to do that. Obviously, they're not going to sell to Barcelona, but I think Milan are going to steer clear of. I just, again, considering the source, considering his injury record, and considering all the financial aspects of the deal, I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I'm going to say no as well because he's Welsh and I don't like the Welsh.
That sounds a little racist, man.
It's definitely not racist. It's probably nationalist, but nationalism and racism is often said as the same thing, isn't it?
We've discussed this before. Let's not discuss this again.
Yeah, right. I think we'll wrap it up here, boys. That's all the questions plowed through. Any closing thoughts?
No, where's the Milan? That's it.
Mari, have a good trip. And hopefully I'll see you at the weekend.
Yeah, man, I'll bring your stickers.
Oh, yeah, nice one.
Fucking child.
Yeah. Fuck off.
You're just jealous because you don't have a Steve Yzerman and Nick Lindstrom.
Those are made-up names. Man. Okay, anyways, continue.
Ooh.
No, they're not.
Shut the fuck up. They're just people I don't know.
Detroit Red Wings Hall of Famers right there, bro.
They are legit probably some of the greatest Detroit Red Wings ever.
Ooh, so they're
nothing. They are. Yeah, there's no probably about it. Yeah, anyway, before we end it, I just want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Euro Fantasy League. Make sure to check out their website, eurofantasyleague.com, to join in on the fun. And once again, you can find out more details about our Serie A Fantasy League via the pinned tweet on our Twitter page. A bit of a longer episode this time, but a good one. Hopefully, been joined by AJ.
Yeah, and you can find me on Twitter at Torgard45. Always a pleasure being on here. Love doing it. Can't wait for next week. We've also been joined by Madison, as usual.
Yeah, you guys can go ahead and find me on Twitter at Madison_DT. And I will not be here this week, so you guys make sure you stay on track, right?
And then just a big special shout-out and thank you to our special guest today, the captain of Jawline FC, my man crush Monday, Matt Santangelo.
That's too much, man. I'm blushing over here. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Matt_Santangelo. And once again, guys, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Thank you very much for coming on, man. And as you know, you can follow me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you next
Patrick,
week.
Patrick, mettila in mezzo, Patrick. Palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira. Perché non tiriamo? ma perché non tiriamo gol? Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Alessio! Il gol del capitano ancora! Ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino, detto ieri in conferenza.